This podshow is pleased to bring you Whiskey and Westerns on Wednesday, direct from Dodge City, Kansas, featuring rich topics on the legends of the Old West. Whiskey to motivate, Westerns to inspire, get it, play it, drink it.
Welcome, everyone, to our very first video stream of Whiskey and Westerns on Wednesday, VOD show. My name is Mike King, and I am the producer and writer of Wild West Podcast. Today, I am with Brad Smalley, a noted passionate Dodge City historian and narrator of Wild West Podcast. During each show, we will talk about one or more of the legends of Dodge City. We will also take a few shots from our selected bottles of whiskey. Brad, welcome. What do you have in store for us this evening?
Well, Mike, since we started talking about doing a show on the earliest days of Dodge City, thought we'd do a little Tin Cup.
Tin Cup.
Tin Cup. Of course, comes out of Colorado. But, Coloradoans weren't the only ones drinking out of tin cups back in those days. As we know from past podcasts and chatting, old Mr. George Hoover, when he opened his first bar in Dodge City, he was selling drinks at 25 cents out of an old tin ladle. And Tin Cup whiskey out of Colorado was inspired by those days, by the miners who started drinking their whiskey at whatever they had available to them. Generally, a tin cup. And the neat thing about this whiskey is it comes with its own little tin cup. They put it right there on the top, just cover up the lid, and you've got your own glass.
Very good.
Now, we tried this in advance.
Yes, we did. And so let's talk a little bit about what we experimented with when we first tasted this whiskey.
Sure. Now, we didn't really know what to expect on this whiskey, but it turned out to be pretty darn good. It's really just a bottle of Friendly. One of the friendliest whiskeys I've probably ever had. It's a high rye American whiskey. It's come from the same people that make Stranahan's, also out of Colorado. So it's cut with a little bit of that Stranahan's, with some of that Colorado water. And it's just a bottle full of good.
So when we tried it in the open container, we got some kind of an experience from it.
We did it in more of the tasting glass.
Tasting glass.
Upstream, yeah, right. Traditional tasting glass that tapered at the top. It had a very good nose on it, very strong hints of vanilla, a little pear. You get that rye spice. You mentioned the black pepper.
Right. There was a little black pepper. But then when we put it in our tin cup,
when we went to the tin cup, it lost a lot of its character.
It did. It kind of just contained it. And
the nose disappeared.
It did.
It was still friendly. It tasted quite good, but we just didn't get that experience like we had originally. So I highly recommend, if you try the whiskey, and I recommend that you do, get yourself a good whiskey tasting glass, at least something that's tapered at the top.
That is
to really get the full
drink
effect.
It straight. If you're going to drink it straight, I would recommend that you do it out of an open glass than you would be like out of a tin cup or maybe even this tin cup.
It'd make a great cocktail too. But I tell you what, while we're chatting, we might as well pour one.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Now, you want it in the little one or the big one?
Well, I think let's take it out of the tin cup,
tin
cup first, and see. Now, would this have been the size of a tin cup that Hoover would have served it in, or would it have been more like this one?
Well, we know that Hoover himself was pouring out of just a dipping ladle at 25 cents a pop.
All right. Well, let's try this out and see what it does for us.
I still like that whiskey, but it's got, out of the tin, it's got a lot more of the alcohol burn.
It does, yeah.
Which, and again, it's only 42%. It got a lot more character out of a nice glass. Really, nothing but fun. It's a novelty gimmick.
I agree.
Go for it, but
If you drink it, I'd drink it out of an open glass. Again, I think that'd be the best way to go.
Absolutely.
This might serve as a shot glass to go in your open glass.
It'd make a hell of a shot glass, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's probably what I'm going to do with mine is...
You tell the story of 10-cup whiskey.
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of light, though, you know?
I do think it would be better at maybe a 45, even a 46%, than strictly the 42.
I agree.
But I'd be curious to see. Of course, we can lower the proof if we wanted to, but we can't very well jack it up any.
That's true. That's true. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about our topic. So 10 Cup goes along with Hoover, and right. Hoover goes along with the starting of Dodge City.
That is sort of the traditional origin story for Dodge City, Hoover's Bar.
So 1872, the train's getting ready to come through. Hoover brings the first bar. Right. He got a lot of pioneers in the area.
He opened his bar in June 17th, if I remember right, of 1872. The railroad tracks hit Dodge City September the 5th.
Okay. So then things started really happening.
They were popping. You had, of course, the impetus behind Hoover building his bar in the first place is after Fort Dodge had banned alcohol. Overnight, you had a whole lot of soldiers. You had a whole lot of buffalo hunters. You had a whole lot of Santa Fe Trail freighters. And you were fixing to have a whole lot of railroad workers, not to mention a growing town site, and every single one of these folks wanted to do a hell of a lot of drinking. And that's the one thing that they all had in common.
And back in those days, you really couldn't get a true barrel of whiskey, but you had a lot of whiskey ranches around.
Several whiskey ranches. Of course, you could ship in. Hoover went back to places like Kansas City. Things were being brought out from Chicago. Of course, once the railroad came in, getting that kind of thing was a whole lot easier.
Right.
It was also more expensive than just pulling something off of a local whiskey ranch, in which case they were absolutely using that Arkansas River water.
So let's picture this. 1872, it's right out in the middle of the prairie. There's no establishment out here. In fact,
the edge of the world.
It is the edge of the world, and there's really one adobe building out here,
right.
Settler's place,
mm-hmm.
And other than that, there's just Fort Dodge. And now, all of a sudden, it's 1872, railroad's coming through, and a boom town's getting ready.
Dodge is booming. Dodge City, like many boom towns all over the West, it wasn't ready for itself, if that makes sense. A lot of growing pains, trying to figure itself out. I'm not sure if Dodge has ever figured itself out, to be perfectly honest with you. But you had people coming in from everywhere. It was the epicenter of the buffalo trade, which was one of the biggest industries in the West at the time. They were feeding everybody, not just the settlers moving west, but they were feeding all the military forts that were out here. They were feeding the freighters. They were feeding people back east, even. Not just with the meat, but with hides, moving the leather, using the leather for industrial belts, pushing the Industrial Revolution back east, bone china. The buffalo was a giant, giant industry, and money could be made.
So out here, we have primarily buffalo hunters,
mm-hmm.
and the impact now becomes the soldiers that are already out here.
Right.
But what a lot of people don't understand is the cattle trade hasn't started yet.
No, not for another 3 years.
Not another 3 years. So we have a settlement. We have probably, a general store, maybe a couple of bars out here.
More than a couple.
that seemed to be the prime business.
Again, when everybody you have here has that one thing in common, you need to cater to everybody.
So really, when you talk about it, Dodge City was founded on whiskey.
Quite literally.
And that was the trade.
Absolutely. In fact, when Ford County was established, the sole reason that Ford County was organized was to legalize their alcohol sales.
Yep. you get what? The population now grows to 1872, somewhere around 500 people.
500-ish, yeah.
And then whoever just decides to come into town and have a drink.
Mm-hmm. They were able to get 609 signatures to officially organize Ford County. Most of those were transients. Very few of those people actually lived in Dodge. We know that because a lot of the names that we know were here didn't even sign that petition. And some of the people who signed it were strictly no name. But it worked. The railroad even took them to court because they were accusing the Ford County application of being fraudulent, and it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it all goes back to alcohol.
So what was law and order like in Dodge City during the early days? And I'm talking about 1872, 1873. What kind of law and order had? I mean, it was
non-existent. It was completely non-existent.
So if somebody got rowdy in one of the saloons, what happened?
People were law unto themselves. And over time, over a short period of time, that became a problem. Because again, you had a whole lot of different kind of people, more so, in fact, than most of those Western boom towns.
Okay, so let's talk about 1872, the first 500 people, law and order. What steps did the businessmen of the settlement take to prevent violence to protect their property?
Well, by the time of the first recorded killing that we know about, Jack Reynolds, who was killed the day the railroad got here, September 5th, 1872. He was shot 6 times by a track layer. By that point, there had already been enough killings in Dodge City that they wanted to start doing something. This is early fall. They got a hold of a feller from Newton, Kansas. Billy Brooks was his name. He'd been the marshal of Newton. There was no city proper yet. There was a town committee that were trying to organize, but it wasn't incorporated. There was no official legal way to hire any law enforcement. So what they did is they hired a bouncer, in fact, in the person of Billy Brooks.
And let's talk a little bit about that Billy Brooks character, because he was quite a character. He had a certain dress about him. So he would walk around town. What did he look like? What was his character, his presence? And
well, he looked like a thug, and he pushed that on himself. He always walked around in the nicest shirt that he could get a hold of, and a couple of big Navy Colts strapped to his hip. We know from eyewitness accounts that is how he dressed. He dressed like a bully. They called him, in fact, Bully Brooks.
Bully Brooks, yep.
The idea was that they were hiring somebody that they thought could be tougher than some of the rougher element of Dodge City.
Well, he had built a reputation for himself, right?
He'd been reasonably effective in Newton.
Right.
But I don't think he was ready for Dodge City.
It was a little bit too much for him.
Not to his discredit. Nobody was ready for Dodge City those first 3 years. He came out, and we have several stories of him doing his thing. He got a hold of, affiliated rather, with the vigilantes group that was growing in Dodge City. And he was involved in several shootings. One account was that there was a scuffle, and four men attacked him for killing someone that they knew, and he was able to take out all four of them.
So then his reputation really grew after he was able to gun down four men against four.
Supposedly. These are all old stories that passed down. There was the legends of the way, right. There was no active newspaper early in Dodge, and some of the early newspapers that we have, we've lost so many issues, but so these are all stories. What we do know is that in retaliation for someone that he may have killed, Billy finally met somebody that he just wasn't tough enough for.
Must have been a buffalo hunter.
It was, in fact, a buffalo hunter.
Buffalo hunters were tough characters.
His name was Kurt Jordan, and he was a little bit more than Brooks could handle.
Okay, so Brooks got tangled up with a buffalo hunter.
He did, and he just, they tangled, they shot it out. Jordan actually, he took a shot at Brooks. The bullet went through two barrels that he was hiding, that Brooks was hiding behind. And the only thing that saved his life is that bullet hit the inside of the iron hasp around the barrel. Saved his life. Billy took off. He hid inside. He hid under a bed in one of the saloons. And the next day, mutual friends of Brooks and Jordan, they got him out on the street together, said, "This needs to stop." And they went out and shook hands. Jordan said, "What we have to say to each other doesn't need to be said to a crowd." They went in one of the saloons, fairly amiable. We don't know the conversation that took place, but we know that in a matter of days, Brooks left Dodge City.
He took off. Now, let's talk a little bit about those barrels that are sitting out on Front Street. Mm-hmm. There was a purpose for those barrels.
Well, there were several different purposes for those barrels.
Not just to stop bullets.
Right. Some were just carried water. Already there was a fear of fire in Dodge City. It was hot, dry, dusty. These buildings were made out of wood. So there were barrels of water situated everywhere, not only on the street, but on the roofs of some of the buildings as well, just in case fire broke out.
And you know, a lot of people, when they see the old West towns, they get a different picture in the movies about how Dodge City looked. And so, but they were really just, in some cases, tents, some cases just adobe walls with some wood to them, but they
mostly
were just
tents. Some of the tents
shacks.
Had a wooden false front. Oh yeah, shacks is very
they
appropriate.
They were totally
name.
Shacks, yeah. And so that was the early Dodge City. But now, okay, so Billy Brooks leaves town. Now they don't have anyone.
They were trying very hard to get something organized. 1873, Ford County was organized. They were able to hire a sheriff after one had been appointed in emergency. Things had gotten so far out of hand that Colonel Dodge from out at the fort wound up declaring martial law over the city. They brought the soldiers out. They surrounded the town. They went in and arrested some of the vigilantes that by this point had become nothing but murderous thugs.
And this is interesting because it leads into, and I want to talk a little bit about this, about Tom Sherman.
Old Tom Sherman.
Tom Sherman had a dance hall.
He did.
And it really was a shack, but it was a dance hall.
Dance hall employed some of the earliest whores and dogs.
And through history, we know that Big Nose Kate took up residence in Tom Sherman's saloon.
Kate Elder, Big Nose Kate, was in Dodge City quite some time before Doc Holliday ever got here. Absolutely.
But let's talk a little bit about the first time that Tom Sherman gets into it with, because there's some history here because of a song that was created later about Dodge City.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't make that tie, but it really happens out of Tom Sherman's saloon. So let's talk a little bit about that night, what happened, and why this song was written.
Well, Tom Sherman was one of many of the vigilantes of Dodge City. He was a member of the commission. And being in his proprietor of his dance hall, of course, he saw quite a bit of what was going on. Sherman took exception to one of his patrons. We don't know what caused the scuffle, actually, but what we do know is that Sherman kicked this fellow out in the street, shot him through the door. He's going out, this fellow is writhing out there. He's shot. He's laying out in the street. Sherman follows him out of the street, looks around, looks up one street and down the other, and says very loudly for all to hear, said, "Well, I better shoot him again, hadn't I, boys?" Put his gun to the man's head, pulls the trigger, aims a little high, and blows his skull cap off, and just the top of his head goes everywhere.
All right, so in this scene, there is a young cowboy, supposedly in town, who becomes a poet.
There was a cowboy from South Central Kansas by the name of Frank Maynard, who is one of several people who wrote an account of this particular event. Although young Mr. Frank was quite a poet and a lyricist, he wrote a poem that was lyrically based on the old Irish ballad Bard of Armagh, the words of which started out, "As I rode out past Tom Sherman's barroom," which over time evolved with a couple of other sources and became the classic cowboy ballad Streets of Laredo.
Streets of Laredo.
Streets of Laredo.
So really, when we're looking at this whole incident of this cowboy dying on the street, but really, we don't have cowhands at this time in Dodge City, but he writes this poem about Tom Sherman.
He writes a poem eventually set to the music of which the meter that he based it on.
You know, in Dodge, during those years, and I think within 2 years' time, they write about 30 killings because of lack of law and order.
Right.
And when we go back to Colonel Dodge, who was in charge of the Fort Dodge at the time, he became outraged, as you just mentioned earlier, because there was an incident that happened. So tell us a little bit about what happened there and why Colonel Dodge sent the troops in.
Well, one of his close personal friends and a former employee of his, William Taylor.
Now, William Taylor was a...
He was a cook.
He was also a black man.
Yes, he was.
He was his personal cook.
He was a personal cook to Colonel Dodge, had moved into Dodge City and started taking up business on his own. Whether or not he was still employed by Colonel Dodge, we're not really very sure, but they did maintain quite a friendship. And Taylor got sideways with a couple of the vigilantes. It may have been because of the color of his skin. It's certainly not the first time that happened. We don't know, in fact, if that was the primary purpose, but they killed him rather brutally.
Well, they first shot his mule.
They did shoot his mule. Of course, Taylor took exception to that.
Yeah, he did. He didn't like the fact that somebody shot his mule.
And more than likely, how dare he talk back to them. And well, yeah, we know those type of stories. Taylor's dead. The gentlemen who killed him thought that they could get away scot-free, being that they were part of the vigilante mob at this point, not knowing the ties that he had with Colonel Dodge.
But this just wasn't a killing in the street. It was, we shoot you, then we take you to the doctor, and then we start talking about it, and we then decide, well, we didn't do the job justice, so we go into the doctor's office, we drag him out in the street, and we finish it off. Now, this is the vigilantes, the law and order of Dodge City at the time.
It was pretty brutal.
So I could imagine how Colonel Dodge was feeling about this.
He took exception. Personal exception. Of course, already knowing full well what was going on in town, but as a military man, he didn't have any authority over the civilian population, which Dodge City was specifically, going back all the way to Hoover Saloon, was built outside the military reservation.
5 miles.
Which was five miles from the fort itself.
Right.
So Colonel Dodge, what he did is he wired the governor of Kansas and asked permission to go in and arrest the guilty parties. He received immediate confirmation, do what you need to do. The soldiers surrounded the town. They went in and arrested one of the parties involved.
What they call the vigilantes.
One of the vigilantes
That was involved in the shooting.
In the killing of Taylor. The other one hid inside one of the ice boxes of it was Peacock's, A.J. Peacock's saloon, and wound up escaping. Several years later, actually, by the time Bat Masterson became county sheriff in 1879, he was still listed as a fugitive with a price on his head. So they wanted him bad. Never got him. They went in. That was the 4th of October, I believe, and the 5th.
Fourth and fifth.
The very next day, Colonel Dodge came back again and sent the soldiers into Dodge City and arrested 5 more of the vigilantes, one of whom was Tom Sherman, one of the most notorious.
Right. Well, very good story, Brad. And now, so here we now have, I think it's October 5th, and the governor, I don't think he's very happy with Dodge City.
He's infuriated.
So there's some political background here, which establishes what? The first sheriff, yes.
In fact, part of that, the telegram that Colonel Dodge sent to the governor was, Ford County is established, but they haven't had elections yet. Said, I'm the only man right now who can do something until they get this figured out. So they did, and that day, on the 5th, after Colonel Dodge had made his arrests, that same day, the Ford County Council had gotten together and established the first officers. They hadn't actually held elections yet, but they appointed certain people to fill all of your usual county offices. And then the following month, they had an actual elections, and with one exception, all of the same people maintained those offices. Charlie Bassett was the very first Ford County Sheriff, which he maintained until 1879, when he was replaced by Bat Masterson.
And that was primarily due that you could only hold that office for so many years.
Right.
And that's something we'll talk about later. But what I'd like to do, fill your tin cup.
Don't mind if I do.
And we'll make a toast to law and order in Dodge City.
I'll top you off. You're good.
I'm good. So here we go with a little tin cup, and to law and order
the rule
in Dodge
of law,
City.
Long may it live.
And to Mr. Bassett.
And to Charlie Bassett.
Well, I think that's it for our show tonight.
Remember, you can check out all of our Wild West podcast shows on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, AnyPod, Amazon, or at wildwestpodcast.buzzsprout.com. We would like to conclude our show by reminding our listeners to check out our up-and-coming digital bookstore by visiting boothillproductions.com and selecting publications. We would also like to thank our sponsor, boothillproductions.com, and if you would like to sponsor our show, just send us an email at wildwestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to our podcast. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribute, non-commercial license. You can learn more about the legends of Dodge City at worldfamousgunfighters.weebly.com or by visiting our new Facebook page at www.facebook.com/wildwestpodcast. Remember to always drink responsibly.
Okay, that's it. Okay.